Okay. Well, so Danella, I just want to say thank you so much for bringing me into this work that you're creating and producing and making happen in the Bronx. But it is really, it's very nice isn't the word, but it's really, it feels kind of special to be included and to be invited to be included. And that feels real. And so you were asking me, like, how did I get to the Bronx and all this stuff?
Yeah.
Is that something?
But no, this is perfect.
Oh.
I just want to say,
yeah,
this is Notes from a Native Daughter.
Oh.
I am Sol Danella. This is
yeah.
episode 52. I am so excited. And this is Jane Gabriel.
We'll be interrupting each other a lot.
No, but this is perfect. Yeah. It's perfect that it started like this. Jane Gabriel's, she's going to talk about herself, and we're going to have
not
a conversation,
much.
But I've known Jane now for, you know, many, actually, I've seen her around for
yeah.
many years. We have a lot of friends in common,
yeah.
people that we both, people that she loves, I love, like Noemi Segarra, Caridad de la Luz, Wally Edgecombe, you know, these are three big, you know, people in our lives, and we share them, and I love it, and...
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe that it's taken this long for us to sort of connect until last year, remember? And
yeah.
for Brujas,
yeah, Brujas
anniversary.
Thing. Yeah.
And then we sort of like, we're like sisters and we have a performance to do. I mean, we have so much to do. Oh my God. And we're going to do it.
We're at the seance table.
Yes, we're at the seance table. And
yeah.
as most of you know, like I'm, you know, I'm a Jane of all trades, just like Jane Gabriel's. In the cultural sphere, in
that's
the art
funny.
Sphere.
Aww.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you are, and you've,
me too.
And that's, you know, what an interesting career you have, and there's something very similar about it. So I want people to know how you come to be this champion of arts, this champion of artists, this advocate, this artist yourself, this academic, all of these things.
Wow.
Start.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. No, I don't know. Okay. No. Wow. There's so many things, but it's anyway. We have a lot to talk
cover.
About and lots of. But I yeah. But so I do want to like thank. Well, thank you for welcoming me. You know all that stuff. But and also want to say, you know, as an adopted, because I people have told me and I believe it, you know, as an adopted Boricua and as an adopted Bronxite, you
Pan-American.
Know, huh?
Pan-American.
Pan-American now. Yay! That, you know, it's just, it's great to be part of the conversation. I've been listening to some of the other podcasts and, you know, that's the thing. There's a really rich group of people in the Bronx doing a lot of incredible work that have a lot of knowledge to offer. And every time you listen to another art like Arnaldo, I listen to Arnaldo J. Lopez and a Wally Edgecombe, and every time I have a conversation with Marian Soto or Noemi Segarra, Caridad de la Luz, or Rockefeller, Marisol Diaz, all these people, Linda Bonilla, it's like something else comes out in the conversation that I know the person, but suddenly I'm like, what? Your grandmother did what?
Mm-hmm.
So that so there's always something, there's when Wally said in his podcast, and he told me once in a conversation about how the Bronx is culturally wealthy and venue poor. It's like, it's true, but it's culturally wealthy. There's so much richness.
Mm. But how did you start
yeah,
in this
so how
path?
Did I start? So
what happened that you...
It's kind of...
How come you end up working with dancers?
Oh, well, I was in... I worked in book publishing for a while, but I was always taking dance class. And then I was like, I want to do more... I thought book publishing was going to be different than what it was. I didn't know it was all going to be like... I mean, it's just like it's objects. I thought it was going to be like the writers and, you know, more people, but it was like objects, selling objects. We love books, but, you know, but I just meant that I was like, oh, I want to work. I'm doing all this work in dance. Like, I want to work with people, with dancers, with that artwork. Like, what can I do with that frame performance work? So that's when I started to figure out how I could maneuver these skills I had learned through jobs. Of how to I could support artists, and I was also trying to do my own dance stuff, but I didn't have a lot of I didn't have a lot of training specifically. I had a lot of energy and a lot of movement, but I didn't know where to put myself with all that. And I don't know, the dance stuff was different then. There were actual dance companies, and I could never anyway. Blah blah blah. So that's the dance
but as
stuff.
A kid,
yeah.
What happened as a kid?
Uh-huh.
Like.
Whoa.
What did you play with, and how did you
oh my God, that's a
go off to enter this world of arts and culture? How does it enter you, or you it?
Ah, okay, that's an interesting thought at the seance table. I think that, well, you know what, where I grew up, there wasn't a lot of art. Like, we didn't have, there wasn't, in school, we didn't have art class. We didn't have, Mrs. Gallagher, she taught us tap dance in this little tiny second floor of a little building in a very small town. She had red hair that she piled on her head and with a cigarette in the corner of her mouth. Okay, kids, shuffle buffalo. So I would be like, shuffling buffalo with my whole heart, you know, but anyway, so basically I know what it's, because I didn't really have much of it and found it much later in college, that I felt like it gives you so much back, and lets you explore the world in another way, lets you connect with people in another way. A lot of friends that I've made, we didn't talk with each other, we were in dance classes together. So we had conversations through movement of some kind, and that was some of the basis for different connections. When I came to New York because of my cousin, who was dancing, she was taking a lot of West African classes. I would just take a lot of West African classes all the time. I was bad, and I would stay in the back row, but slowly, little by little, I got a little bit better, and I just learned to what the drums do and how much you get, like, you just want to hear the drum. So you just go back to hear the drum again and to be with people and to, you know, try to figure out the complexity of doing these different kinds of movements. And so I started, so that was one way in. I took a lot of classes with Janiba, Mariba, wait.
How to remember that.
Mariba, Sosta, Faretta.
That was
Leslie Dance and Skate, Leslie with his roller skates, purple. And then Faretta, and then I took Richard Gonzalez, Afro-Cuban, watching him move one time. Like he would go, sometimes he would go off, like he was gone. And it was so beautiful to watch that happen. And so I feel like that was, I don't know, I learned a lot from that. I learned it was an entrance into this all this other vocabulary of learning all the Yoruba and like all the different meanings of different movements. And I don't know, it was like really addictive in a beautiful way. So I just kept wanting to go back and like just absorb it. Mm. And then what happened for me to come up here is I was in a workshop with Movement Research, and I forget the name of the artist. She was from New Zealand, and she was really lovely. The stuff that she would have us do was really great. And Kathy Westwater was in that class. And Kathy Westwater at that time was dancing with Miriam Soto. And we had this one exercise where we had to, one person had to tell the rest of us a dream. And Kathy Westwater told us this dream, and it was so, like, we kind of went on the dream with her, and something happened, and it was, so fast forward 6 years later, I come back to New York, I'm at a dance workshop or a dance performance, and I see Kathy, we meet on the stairway, and I just blurt out, like, I've never forgotten that dream. She's like, neither did I, and then we started talking again, and then I was saying, like, I need to get out of corporate Midtown, like, and she was like, well, there's an opportunity at Papatien, where I work. So I was like, really? She's like, you should come up and find out. So that's how I ended up. That was the entrance. Like, Kathy Westwater invited me up and said, no, maybe this could be something for you. And then I met with Marianne Pepon, and they were on their way out to Philadelphia. And I don't know, they just kind of saw a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And when I got that job, I was like, I'm going to make this work because I am not going back to a cubicle. So that was like, I just was like, I'm going to figure this out. Whatever this is, I'm just going to figure it out. And I came in when Merien had, at Hostos, had produced the Bronx Dance Fest mm-hmm. in 99, October 99. And so I learned a lot from that. And there was so much that happened. I mean, that's when Quickstep proposed to Rockefeller on stage. And there was a dance jam in the atrium. And I kind of like caught the village vibe of the Bronx. And I was like, that's a great way to be in New York City. Like, because I'm more from small town rural in a way. And I felt like the Bronx has that. And it has this improvisational quality that sometimes different things happen when I would go around the Bronx in different places. I have to think of a good example for you. But I just remember different things happen. Like, oh, it's just around the corner there. That's where you get the key. Or just these really... that felt very familiar to me in a very, like, yeah, you just kind of figure it out. And there's not this big rule of how things get done. We're just people making agreements to how we're going to, make something together or create something. So that was how I got, that's how I started. And then I just kind of got hooked in. And, the reason it worked is that everyone I went to said, yes, I'll work with you. Yes, I'll help you out. And that's how it happened. And also I had Pepon and Merien, like they weren't around, but people knew their names. So I would say, oh, I work at Pepetien. You know that organization that Merien and Pepon were? Like, oh, yes, yes. Like, okay, great. So can I meet with you and try something? And
so who are some of the artists that you first came to work with when you came to Pepatiana?
When I first started, so the first thing I did was I created a festival for 2 weeks, and I had something at Arthur Avila's, because I had seen him also, you know, Arthur is here, with Charles had presented something at the Hostos Bronx Dance Fest, so I was working with him, and I brought him to the Bronx Dance Museum, and he created this piece based on some artworks that were happening at the museum, and that was when Ethan was working there. Ethan Hall, rest in peace. And so that was one thing. Also, I had work. There were a few dancers with Miriam Soto, Sita Frederick, Antonio Ramos, Noemi Segarra, Gina Benitez, those days. And so I created, you know, whatever, not I created, but, you know, I worked with BAD to make this event so they could show their solo works. So it was like a way to, that was, I pulled from there, and then who else? And then they had introduced me to Awilda Sterling, you know, lovely Awilda. So I was like, Awilda, let's do something. Okay, like, we figured something out. I met with Crash and Tim Rollins at that time. We had a little meeting together. It was just kind of a jam session. But, and I remember they laughed so hard because they were talking about, like, why they came to the Bronx, and they were like, what brought you here? And I was like, I got a job. it was there. So I'm going down memory lane in my head when I'm talking out loud. But
then you kept pulling artists together from different disciplines.
Yeah, I kept.
That's the beauty.
Yeah, that was the fun part, because I was like, okay, dance, yes, but what I can bring is spoken word, because I had also come up through the Eureka Poets Cafe. That was the place, and that's where I did some slams and just like the beauty of the Eureka. Let's shout out for Eureka, because, you know, I was just talking about the other day. It was so funny. There were a few of us that kind of connected. Dot, I forget her last name now. Felice Bell, Lynn Procope, and a few other people. But, you know, it would be 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd be stumbling out of that place just like, oh, my God, here we are again, stumbling out of the New Eureka at 3 o'clock in the morning, because you just wanted to see that next person. This, you know, the person would walk up with some battered notebook, open it up, and it would just, like, whole world. They give you a whole universe in, like, 3 minutes, and you're just waiting for that next hit or something. So, anyway, so I wanted to bring spoken word. Dance was part of it. Visual arts, sort of, a little bit here and there, but I'm not from that background, and it's also like I have so much respect for it that I would just, if the dance kind of, if there was some connection that you could make around dance with visual art, then yeah, I'll do it, but I don't know enough about that stuff. It's objects, it's different. And then theater, I kind of stayed away from theater because, again, it's like, there's a lot of theater already in the Bronx, and it's like, it's a very big place. I was just like, just let me stay with dance, what I know, and spoken word, and different conversations I would put together, and just see where that can take us. So yeah, I did that, and then I was like, yeah, and then I tried, what's a poetry book? Let me try a poetry book. So I put a little poetry book together with a CD. I don't know why at the time seemed very important.
that is important.
Yeah.
I have a book project that I am obsessed with having it with music, but that's a different story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Off record.
Yeah,
continue.
Yeah. Okay,
please carry on.
No, I don't know what. So anyway, so that started it, and then it just kind of kept growing, and I kept trying to like fold in some different organizations I would hear about. Like I don't remember the name. It was a long time ago, and I only did a couple things there really quick. But it was a juvenile like center. It's near here. It's near Hostos. Anyway, just a really simple thing, but I was like, I went to visit there because I just called somebody up randomly, and I was like, I'd love to bring a dance teacher there. And they were like, oh, okay. I was like, yeah, I can. I have money for it from a grant. I can pay for it. I just need, you know, I thought it'd be interesting to reach out to a different group and bring some dance there. And I don't know, it's just a small thing, but I was there. I was like, wow, these teenagers, like, they're under so much stress. Like, it's stressful enough being a teenager, but then they're all together, and they're under stressful circumstances and all this stuff. But it was really, you know, it's a little bright little moment of, but it was great to bring a dance teacher in there. And the teacher had a good time, and she was like, it just felt good to give them a break for, like, 45 minutes. Like, you don't have to think about anything else. Just try to get this move. And I felt like that was a small thing that did it. Like, it taught me something also, like what craft can do. It's like it has its own life to it, and you can find more life in it when you are creating with it. Like, what does the work ask you to do? You keep following what the work asks you to do, and then pretty soon you're doing a movement that you didn't think you could do. So there's that. I just kept trying to fold in different organizations. Like, I did stuff with BAD, of course, Bronx Academy of Arts and Dance. I did stuff, of course, at Hostos. I did stuff, of course, at Pregones Theater, Bronx Museum.
You've done all this stuff, but you've also incorporated, like, grant writing and, you know, how do you enter that world?
of grant writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big one because
that's an amazing skill and
a lot of people
share about that.
A lot of people have it, but yeah, I guess not. But I guess that was also realizing that in order for me to keep Mediana had been very lucky. It was really interesting. Like, it's funny, like, she had gotten these two big grants just as she was leaving to teach at Temple University. So it's like there was some money to keep us going, like, for a year and a half or whatever. But then it was like, I have to bring in money to keep myself in this position and to do these projects. So, you know, when you're under the gun or when you're under feeling the pressure of it, it's amazing what you'll try to what you'll do. So there was a consultant that was around. So, of course, I would, like, try to write something. I tried to look at all of Mediana's grants, what she had done. I tried to do something similar, and I would try. Mediana was, like, super busy, like, super, super busy. So she would try to read over and give me some feedback, and then the consultant would give me feedback, and I would just try everything, basically try anything that who else can read this to help me get it as strong as I can before I send it out. And and then it was just seeing what other, paying attention to what other, like, that's a whole other thing, like the grant thing in a way. It's like paying attention to what other found, who else is out there? Who else can I apply to? I mean, those were early days, right? So it was really, I had a festival and made it into a 6-week thing in the spring, then a 4-week thing in the fall, and then I started doing these APAP showcases to try to get increased visibility for artists. So, I just tried to follow the trail, follow the thread. Yeah, that was Wally. I mean, first of all, it was Wally who, like...
Yeah, but you brought in, you collaborated.
Yeah, but I just wanted, like, Wally had, it was his idea. And it was interesting to, like, and to learn, you know, when you're working with someone who's had 30 years of experience in the field, that's also a plus. And he sort of described, like, how he came to this idea of what could work. And then I had been sort of working with another project that had been funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, New York City Cultural Innovation Fund. And I was like, oh, I know what I can bring to this. So what I brought to it was the backstage sort of stuff that I was like at the beginning of it, have all the artists meet at the beginning of the season. And Wally was like, this never happens. And that was cool too, because I just knew that group of artists, there were some really strong people in that room. It was Antonio Ramos, Noemi Segarra, Raquel Rivera, who else? Cita Frederick, I'm forgetting someone. Los Motritos, Caridad de la Luz, I think that's everybody. And to get that group together in a room to say, here's what I'm thinking of doing for my project. I was like, yeah, I really wanted everyone to hear each other talk about their work, because then, you know, that's part of it. It's like we have to keep that growing thing happening, because if not, then it was going to be each artist saying, like, I have my gig, I'm just going to, like, put the blinders on and work as hard as I can to make this. It's demanding to make a 45, 60 minute piece, like, all on my own. Like, that's already a big challenge. But I was like, but I want to make sure that we're crisscrossing each other's paths, because when this thing is over, I hope that some of these paths can continue to cross in different ways. Or if you want a musician, you're going to be like, oh my God, you had that great musician, who was that name? You know, just to keep building so we can keep growing. So that was fun. It was just like asking the artists, like, please attend each other's rehearsals at least once or twice. Please interview each other. We had a blog online, lots of interviews, and that was really enriching, and a lot happened from that, because when you have a couple different artists who have very different perspectives about their work and culture, a lot comes up. The whole thing was documented with BronxNet. Yay, BronxNet. Marisol Diaz took all the photos. So we kind of created a lot of, like, materials. I would invite different writers to come and pay them a very small stipend to, like, create some written documentation about things. I had post-performance discussions, which are normal, but I would always try to, like, invite another, like, rope one more person into the conversation. Who else can we rope in to, like, be part of it? So it's just kind of using the center of Young Roots and trying to see how many different things we could fold into it that would flow through it and would create threads beyond just that one night that might be able to catch at a later point and create something else out of. So that was, it was fun. And different things have come from that. Getty Dad was back in October 2016 inviting Nini Ali, who invited...
I saw that performance.
Yeah, right. So she also invited a few other young people into it as well. So it was like, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
So now you, now you have like basically, you know, 20 years
going at
this. And when I talk to people that know you, artists specifically, they always say, you know, without Jane, I don't know what I'd do.
Oh, man.
Jane helps me set a goal, or Jane helps me, like, understand how I'm going to, you know, look for money or support. That is just phenomenal, right? That people respect you like that and look at you like that. Definitely sort of like a you know, like a mentor and someone that leads us, including myself. So I want that answer, reaction, to then segue into this universe that you're doing now, where I'm in, from Canada, because you have the Canada connection, because you did. This woman did a PhD. She's very humble. In Canada. You can talk about that. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But so go back. So how do you feel knowing that you've provided artists with platform. You provided them with resources. You know, they don't feel so lost and scattered.
Well, that makes me feel like, yeah, and I want to do more. Because I feel like creative isolation is a big thing. It's really hard when you feel like you have something to say. You know, it even goes back to, if I want to look back at, like, no art programs and, like, growing up, it's like, I have something to say, but I don't know how to say it. I don't know where to go. And, you know, sometimes it's like being that person. It's like, you know what? I see what you're doing. And did you know there's this whole other organization that's doing, you know, I like to connect. I am, one person described it as a connector. And that's very true. And I don't think about it, because it's just like, I just see it. I can see it for other people much better than I can myself. But I see it in different things. Like, we are at the seance table. But I see it, and I'm like, well, that could happen. So, and I think sometimes, you know, it's like everybody needs a friend sometimes. It just says, like, no, you can do it. And sometimes the best thing you can do for an artist is give them a deadline. The best thing you can do. And sometimes someone will say, talking about an idea, and I'm like, you realize you just said that out loud, right? Now I'm going to talk to you in two weeks and I want to hear what's going on with it. No, I'm like, why not? Why not? Or, Rockefeller's a long time ago, Rocca, but she was working on this little solo about shoes. She was like, I don't know, Jane. I'm like, it's hilarious. Come on. Like, I want to see a little bit more. Come on, come on, come on. You know, just because it was so funny and it was like, there's something in there. And sometimes you need someone on the outside, because as all of us, we're so caught up in our own, like, what our thoughts are and what our ambitions are, or we don't even call them ambitions, we're just like, it's what I have to do. You just get kind of, you know, it's hard to see from the outside what might be useful for you to, like, okay, just what's your first next step? I don't want to get too Oprah about it, but, like, what is that first next step? Because I was also like, I want to wait. Like, why wait? I know you want to wait, kind of wait, but, like, everything takes a year and a half to get going anyway. So you might as well just start with something. And that, you know, the world is going to tell you something back. And the idea that you have, it might not manifest in the, like, extreme vision that you have for it. But it's, you're going to get something else from your idea is going to move in the world. And then things are changing all the time. So it's going to tell you, it's going to shift you back a little bit more. And then you're going to see where you go. But so, and also, like, I talk to people like that, and they're just like, what? And I'm like, you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. I know. They're just like,
Yeah, I know. I'm like, there's no way around. You just have to do it. And it's awful. And I know it's awful in a way, because you're by yourself in a studio doing it. But it's also like, well, there are people that want to know. And especially if you're in the Bronx and all this, it's like, if you don't do it, who else is going to? And the voice, like, you know, I think Jose Ortiz said this a long time ago. He was like, we carry our stories in our bodies, you know, because it's not the world and the way the press is and all these things and what the press and external people pick on sometimes. It's like, that's not the whole story. You like, sometimes people go for like the drama part. And it's like, yeah, that drama's like everywhere, but that's not all of it. There's also just like regular things happening and people just trying to like get their story out or get the dance movement out or whatever, and just trying to grow their vision and their idea of their own growth to, you know, to move it in the world. That sounded pretty good.
Talk about your PhD and why why'd you choose the Bronx?
Yeah.
What's the title?
Oh.
And go into that.
All right.
Because you went to Canada to do
this. Yeah, I did in Montreal. You know why? It's hella cheaper. also, I have family there, so it wasn't out of nowhere. But what happened was that I was at Pepetia, and I was doing the work, and then I just was like, I just felt like I was getting stuck. Like, I couldn't, I was just kind of meeting my own, I don't know, I just was like, oh, I don't know what else to do. Like, I just felt like there's something else I can do, and I can't see it, I can't grasp it, and I'm getting frustrated. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm getting cranky. That's not good. And some of it was that, and now it's so weird to say, back in those days, but there weren't blogs and stuff like that. And so, and there wasn't, there were no reviews of the different artists doing work. There wasn't anything written. And that we were losing, I felt like we're losing something in this. We're documenting stuff as much as we can with video and photo, but where is that written documentation? And I would go to some meetings with, like, at APAP, you know, there's, like, packed with all these presenters, and people would sometimes talk about this, like, new thing they were doing, and I would be like, oh, my God, like, they did that in the Bronx in the 80s, but I didn't know how to, like, I'm better at putting my words together, talking in front of people, in front of microphones, but those days I was just kind of like, I didn't know how to say it, you know? So, not to make fun of myself, but it was like, there's more happening here in the Bronx that people don't know about, and they should know about it, because if they did, you know, there's something to, people in the Bronx have had to face different things and figure them out, like, in a very deep, profound way, and it's real. And if you don't know it, like, you're missing out on a huge knowledge base. So I was getting cranky about, like, all these arts, all these dancers doing really great work, and, like, nothing writing about it. It's just, like, frustrating. And we had BronxNet, thank goodness, but in terms of newspaper or print. So I was like, well, you know what? I know I can write, and I'm getting frustrated, so I'm going to, like, see what's up with school, because maybe there's something more I can do there. So I was looking around different schools, and I did go to Montreal. I do have family there, and that's part of it, too. I was like, okay, I'm going to, and it is a different, like, scale, pay, you know, whatever, what's the word, tuition. So that was important. So I did go up there, and it was also very interesting because, in a way, it was good for me to start to do this big writing project and to figure it out and not be in New York City, because I don't think I would have been able to. I needed to get out of the city, because the city is always like, come here, go out, why stay in? That was hard to, like, you really kind of have to buckle down to do the writing. So that was important. Like, I knew myself, like, remove yourself from the temptation. And also to be in another, yet another bilingual, culturally wealthy place, or another place that's, like, really coping with different languages and different cultures and, you know, and indigenous and a lot of different, a whole different range of struggles. So it was interesting to kind of, like, learn, like, it just helped me kind of see the Bronx sometimes in different ways, or even more startling. And it'd be weird sometimes, so I'd be in this little, my little room, and, like, writing, and then looking up and being like, oh my God, like, in, everyone in the Bronx is talking to me, and I'm alone in a room, but it's very lively. There's a lot of conversation happening in my mind, reading all this stuff and trying to write something. And so I got into it, and it took a while, because I had a little, like, detours and stuff like that. And it's a whole process doing the thing. Like, I didn't, when I signed up to do it, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, to be honest, but then you realize as you go along, like, you really have to really just write a lot. And but anyway, so the point is that I wrote about Familias, which was a project that Mariana Pepón created in 1994-95 at Hostos with Wally. And it was kind of a pioneering performance, and included members of 10 local families in every aspect of process and production. So, like, they were doing that kind of work in 94-95. It's pioneering in terms of that kind of social practice work. Nobody really knows about it. They were doing it way before. So that's kind of like, hey, pay attention. And also, they also, Marianne had this thing. It's great with Marianne Pepón around. Like, there's always something else you're learning, or, you know, other artists are pointing out for you to learn something more. You take cues from artists. You know, there's cues that they give you, that if you listen for them, it's a thread that can be very vital and can be very generative in its own way. So you have to look for those, like, flashes of gold. So Marianne had this thing called InReach, which is very simple, but instead of outreach, which means, like, someone's, you know, reaching out into a different culture or whatever to make work, she was calling it InReach because, of course, it's like they're from Puerto Rico, they came to New York in the 70s, you know, it wasn't outreach, it was in reach. It's close by, it's in. It's a pocket next door. So that was interesting to have that also as a conceptual term in reach. Like, maybe there's something more we can do with that. Also, it's at Hostos. So I learned a lot about Eugenio Maria de Hostos. The other term was like New Rico that Arthur Aviles and Caridad de la Luz was using. So I got into thinking about conceptual terms, and I feel like there's something more I want to do with it, but I can't see it yet. But it was also, I felt like these terms and knowing what these artists had cultivated from their own work were little like gifts that another artist who I heard one time say, like, you feel in the Bronx like you're struggling, you're like on your own, you're trying to make this thing happen, you're like, you know, there's always this like movement with the fist going through the air of like struggling, I'm trying, I'm da da da. And I was like, if an artist knew like more of the conceptual legacies and artistic legacies were already like large threads in the history of the Bronx, you could say, per ejemplo, like, yes, I'm doing Familias, but Familias is actually, and this is true, was and actually was connected in some way to the Teatro Puerto Rico, which was another place that brought families together to see live music in Spanish at a time when there wasn't, you know, Spanish TV and all the rest of it. Just hear it in your own language. So in some way, Teatro Puerto Rico in the 1940s was this unheard whisper that somehow filtered through all the way up to Familias in 94, 95. Not that Wally or Maria del Perpón were here in the 40s, but that thread in the Bronx itself was somehow a whisper. So I just feel like it's a little bit of my dream world, but, you know, but I like this idea of maybe these other concepts, if an artist now could say, like, yes, in reach, well, yeah, as you know, like, I this concept that Marianne Pepon had with InReach, it's something also that's applicable to my work because of blah, 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 or New Rico, yes, I've evolved that idea of New Rico, meaning a place of, the Bronx is a place of abundance, que rico, it has all these things, like, I don't know, I just felt like that might support other artists to know that, like, you might be alone, but just remember, kind of, you're not totally alone, and even though your work might be going off in these very different directions, just that there are, I mean, maybe it's a little dreamy in its way, but it's like there are people watching you that you don't even know they're watching you. They're watching you, and just know, like, they want to know what you got. Like, don't hide it. Like, bring it out. Like, what is it? Tell people about it. Don't. So I like that. I like that. Like, oomph to it. I like that. That was so. What happened was that I got through the dissertation, and what I tried to do with that was to write a lot of stuff, and a lot I kind of got after the reader in that, like, I didn't make it easy. I kind of was like having little bits of dialogue and then would interrupt myself because the Bronx moves quickly, and we do interrupt ourselves, or we are interrupted by the sound of the train going by, and I kind of wanted that feeling of how people in the Bronx, like, you get interrupted, you just like wait for the train to go by, and then you pick right up again. So I put that in the reading of it. I was trying, you know, and I also I was like, what else can I do with this? So I also created a DVD, and I packed it full of stuff because I was like, this is going to be in the library. Like, good, then this DVD is in the library, this writing is in the library. And also, what I did to get the writing going was, because I've been taking in a lot of all these different artists and performances and their work and seeing their work and talking about the work, I was like, I want to make a piece. So I made this like dance theater solo, and I was incorporating a lot of, it was my way to also, it's hard to sit still and write. So it was a way in the studio where I could figure some things out. Like, something would come out physically, a movement. And I was like, wow, that is really, later I'd be like, that, I know why I did that movement at that time. That is so funny. That is Wanda Ortiz. That's Wepa woman. Who knew that was in my physicality? Or I'd do something like, oh my God, that is so annoying me. That's really fun. Or Antonio would come out. That was really fun. Antonio Ramos. So it was a way for me also. I was suddenly that idea of like, I'm not so alone. Like, all my friends are here. And if I do one movement, like, oh, there's Raka or there's somebody. So I just enjoyed, it's more than enjoyed that. I got a lot out of it. So anyway, I had all these three different things I tried to put into the academy in a way. Tommy DeFrance told me, and I was very proud, that he got in, like, reading the dissertation, he was like, sort of got like, oh, this is something more we can do here, of like, let's create a gathering of people that are all working in performance curation, which is slowly becoming a field, kind of, sort of, on its own, with who are all working in communities of color. Like, let's get that group together. And I was like, that's really cool. So he invited me to co-convene, which meant that I, you know, he sort of made the final decisions of who to invite, because Tommy's been doing this stuff for a long time. He's a dean of a department, kind of knows what's what. And so that's how it started in 2015. We had a gathering of people. A lot happened. And then I was invited to come back in 2016, another same core group, but then other people also around it. It was just like, felt like there's something that's like developing here, a conversation that people really want to have. They're really invested in it. The thing is, people in that room, they're not careerists. It's like they're doing, this is the work they're due because that's what they do.
A lot of creativity coming out of me that I felt that for many years I had suppressed.
Yeah.
For 10 million reasons. No, yes. Not a tragedy. Either I was really busy or focused, or, you know, once I left the dance world, and we share that language. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did dance seriously for, you know, 25 years, which is a long time. I am almost 50.
Yeah.
So it's funny to think that now it's been, you know, a while since I've been a dancer, even though in my soul I'm a dancer.
Yeah.
And I do relate to what you're saying. And I still think of choreography, or I still have body memory, or I can relate to what you're saying, that you see yourself as, you know, a movement that you carry is Noemi.
Yeah.
You know, like it happened. I understand that very well. I think I adopt movements too from people that I'm around with a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think, oh, this can work for me.
Yeah.
Do you know? Not because I want to be them, but like, oh, yeah, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And that will bring me to something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's, at one point, like, I don't want to get into this.
No, but it can support your thinking.
It can support
it. It can support your thinking. Like, just the way somebody does, like, listen, where they're like, listen, it's like this. And you're like, whoa, that got my attention. How did that get my attention? Because of what the person was saying, and also just this gesture. Like, that gesture said what the words wanted to say and amplified it even more. Like, you got the word, and you got the feeling behind it. You know, like the bigger part of, not just the word, but like where that word is coming from in that person's, like, life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a reason. And sometimes I think also, like, at different times, like, genius comes at all ages and at all times, and you never know where genius or when genius may strike, which is something Marianne would say, because she was like, videotape everything in rehearsal, videotape it all. You never know when genius may strike, which I always like that. But I think it's also like at different times you're able to see another thing more clearly than you were at another time, just because things get busy or there's a lot to do. There's always a lot to do, and sometimes you get kind of like just in the rhythm of, like, I just have to get this thing done next, you know? Mm-hmm. So those moments when you have a moment to, or you know what it is, you have that one conversation with that friend who, like, kind of plucks something out of what you say and says, what about this thing that you're kind of saying but not really saying? Why don't you just do this? And you're sort of like, oh, yeah, I could. That would be great. And then if you get that one thing done, that feeling of, like, complete the one thing, because when you complete the one thing, it gives you the energy to, like, get to the next. But if you don't complete it, then you're kind of in constant middling, which has its own purposes, but sometimes it's good just to finish one thing, because then you can stand on it, and then you can, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It gives you energy back.
I do. Completion.
Yeah, a little
commitment.
Bit.
Commitment.
Yeah, a little bit.
It goes back to what you were saying before, when you speak with artists, and you're telling them, well, what about this project? And where are you? And what step are you going to take? You know, take that first step.
Yeah. Without making it too, like, too demanding. Because sometimes sometimes you're not ready. Or you want it, but you're like,
right. But the conundrum is, or, you know, like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, is that if the commitment is really important, right? Mm-hmm. The pace, then you navigate that through what is going on around you. Mm. But to make something of something, you have to take a step.
Yeah.
You know?
Reminds me too of the phrase that it's not exactly. I argued that it was a Bronxite phrase, even though, but that makes some making something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that phrase, and I kind of like broke it down. I don't know. Like you're making something out of nothing because there's always a something, and there's never not a nothing. Like, and there's something to that. Like, if I, you know, that is kind of what the Bronx in its past and is part of the hum underneath a lot of the activity that happens here.
The Bronx mystique.
Yeah, right, that Arnaldo like picked up. What about that? And we all know what that is without knowing what that is, but people point to it often. But it's, I want to keep the Bronx as the center. Like the Bronx is the center where we come and we create some stew and some richness together. And then people go out to different places to create other work, but then they also at some point they come back to the Bronx. So it's like this like cultivation of something here that goes out, but then there is this like, how do you fold it back in? It does get folded back in some way.
What do you consider yourself? Like if you were...
Consider yourself?
Yeah.
What do you consider?
Well, so what do you do? You know, the famous...
I asked you that question too earlier. What do you do?
Exactly. I've been nailing it to, I'm a creative worker.
Boom.
Right? But I should say, you know, a creative executive, a creative worker, you know.
Executive sounds very VIP.
I've paid my dues.
You certainly have.
I've fucking work hard, man.
Woo.
And so have you. So what do you, how do you nail it down?
Well, I was thinking about how, I was just, that when you said that, I thought of something that Rockefeller was talking about the other day. But it was nice because, you know, when you look at, sometimes people when they look at you, they're like, oh yeah, she does some stuff. She has no idea. Because a lot of the work that we do is like the, what they call that invisible work or whatever. And Rocka too, she was like, oh yeah, Jane, but you know, Rocka knows how to, she taught me. Rock, I'm shouting you out, but it's a good one, don't worry. But she was like, yeah, some people say, like, they don't think I do much because I'm, you know, basically 5 foot, sorry, Rocka. And, but she turns around, she's like, I know, people don't think I do a lot, but you know, I have this, like, nonprofit dance company that I co-founded, and, you know, yeah, I got this Ford Foundation funding, and I created this like documentary film that's gone around the world, and I'm da-da-da-da-da. You know, people, but funny enough, you know, some people just don't see that, and I'm like, woo, good way to turn it around, you know, like people don't know, and what did you ask me?
So what do you do?
Yeah, so I've...
You, I wonder about... Yeah, I love this Rocka description breakdown.
I know, I'm sorry,
but
Rocka.
I wanted,
but it's a good one.
What do you...
Okay,
how do you
so
break
what
down
I said, what I said was that I... Like, the latest thing I said is... Because I am a performer. I don't want to lose that part of what I do because there's... It's always a big challenge to do it, and I'm always never satisfied. I could always do better with it. But I say I'm a performer, a producer slash curator, and a writer. Those are like the three things that I say now. I think that's, yeah, I think that'll be fine. That's what I say.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like the same.
Right.
Except I'm going back to my artist part.
It's good to, like,
dormant for a really
long
time.
Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, it's like, yeah, you can, cause the fact is we're around a lot of artists that really like, that's pretty much all that they do is that. They're all their work, all their extracurricular is all feeding into like their choreography or whatever it is that they're doing with their craft, you know? But for some of us that have, like, that's part of it. Like, even if you say it's dormant, it's like maybe, kind of, but you can't lose the way you've been trained to look at choreography, the way you've been trained to look at another artist's work. Like, there's just... You don't know it because it comes so naturally to you now that you don't even think that you're actually thinking like a choreographer when you are, even in your writing, even in creating this thing, like it is there. So even though you might say dormant, it's actually, it's always there. It's just there in a different way. You're not kind of pulling it out and saying, this is everything that I do. You're like, this is part of what I do because it influences this other writing that I do, which influences how I'm setting up these podcasts in this room at Hostos Community College under a tent. And so, you know, like it, I don't know, just like, basically it's like give yourself a, it's there. And even when you're not sure, it's still there. It's still operating. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. And to close.
Sing.
What makes you fight? What makes you, why are you, I guess, why do you do this? Like, what makes you fight for it?
Yeah.
What are you fighting for?
Yeah, it's so funny because Wally talked about that once. Gaddy Dad asked me that once. And she's like, Jane, you know, what? But I guess I feel like there's a reason that I used to have a while ago. But I feel like one thing is I like this, but it's true. Like, dysfunction is kind of my comfort zone, which sounds funny, but it's true. Like, if it's too like done already, if it's too set up, then it's like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I don't need to be in a place that's already everything all set up for me just to walk into and like poof. Like, I have to have something. Like, I need material. I have to have something to work with. I have to have, like, I want to know. I'm probably not, and there's probably something else I could say to answer that better, but because there's something you get out of it. Or it's not just a personal thing. It's also, like, there's people out there that need you to fight for them. And not just, like, but they're living their life and doing what they do, and you might be, it's just the way different people are wired. Like, you might be able to see what they're doing, and they can't because they're just in it. And you can be like, do you understand what this artist is doing? Like, do you understand? Or even, like, one point, this is going to shift things off to another direction. But I was with a group of curators, and they were talking about different things that artists were doing. And I say, yeah, in the Bronx, they have this Hunts Point Fish Parade. And they were like, that's radical? Like, kind of like, what? I'm like, oh, right, let me explain. For you, you can see that as, like, every little town, small town out in America and the States has their parade. I was like, this is a different thing. Do you understand how large the Bruckner Boulevard is? And when they closed it down, like, that's massive. And for all these people to, like, gather together, create these, like, crazy costumes or not really know, why am I doing this? I don't know, but I'm here I am with all my friends walking along. And or to have Hunts Point Avenue with all the kids were just, like, they were crazy. They were so happy, like, running all across the avenue and, like, ma, like, running around. And all the mothers were out and the parents were out. Like, that in certain circumstances might be seen like, oh, that's nothing. But you're not seeing what it is here and what the history of it is here. And that's something worth fighting about, fighting for. And that's just a very community-based example. But it's also fighting for an artist that is from the Bronx and maybe is not so into hip-hop and is afraid, like, everywhere I go, they just want me to teach hip-hop. And I have this whole modern training. And it's like, well, that's worth fighting for also. Like, people have these ideas. People have these ideas of categories that are really annoying. And there's a lot more happening. I feel like I keep coming back to the hum or, like, this thing that's happening underneath borders or underneath categories or underneath all these things that want to limit and depress people or put people in different zones, that there's actually a lot more happening underneath that some, I don't know, whatever, you know where I'm going with that, but there is. So I just want to make a lot more room for that conversation and for different people to be able to express everything that they have going on, not just only what people think they have, because there's always more.
I love it.
Está todo.